so welcome. So were you guys, you were here last month, right? No. Okay. Were you here last time? Mm-hmm. Oh, visiting. Okay. Me? No, you literally live in Oregon. I thought you meant you're from Oregon.
No.
Uh-huh. What's your name?
Monica.
Tell me your name again. That's right. I'm like, wait a minute. It's like playing that game where you turn two things over and you're like, I just saw that.
Yeah,
I'm named after her. Cool. Okay. Let's just do a little brief meditation too. Set the stage for us. So, Monica, number one, have you meditated much? Do you have some background in this? Okay, as long as you're comfortable with it. All right. We may have some people popping in due to the rain, so we'll just let that all work with our minds. So settle your body down, starting with the physical. You can let your thighs feel heavy on the cushion. Maybe a sense of energy sliding out of the brain, down across the shoulders, down through the body and the trunk, down, down into the ground. Starting off with a feeling of sinking, not in a negative way, just chunking down. Nice deep relaxation, maybe even a nice deep breath as you exhale and just simply relax. And once you find that connection to the cushion, the literal physical connection, gently lift up through the middle of your spine as you sort of roll your spine straight and the back of the top of your head lifts towards the ceiling, which will slightly lower your chin. Straighten out the cervical part of your spine. Let everything lift and sink. Two poles of energy, lifting and settling. Next, you just check in with your breath, and at first, simply notice where you're breathing from as a point, a starting point. And then use your mindfulness to let the breath settle down, down, down into the belly until you find the expansiveness of letting the belly balloon out when you breathe in. Roll the breath up and then down and retract the belly slightly when you breathe out. You can start with this exaggerated breathing to settle and then just let it become natural, smooth. And next we look into the mind, taking a snapshot of how we feel right now. Tired, quiet, happy, just kind of get a sense of where you are, starting point. And then gently, very gently, bring the mind home. Let it settle down. Tell it to relax. And begin to focus clearer and clearer on the breath. It's like you were bringing a picture into focus. Just bring that breath and that focus together. until that's all that you can feel and see, just focusing on the breath. Have absolutely no worries whatsoever if the mind wanders. No harsh talk. Just bring it back. That's all there is to do in this moment, is focus on the breath. Everything else drops away. Now we'll try just a very brief, very simple sound meditation. Once the mind is calm, the body's relaxed. We all know that our brain, our mind, they try so hard to find something to think about, something to figure out, something to fix, something to do. So we need to treat it like a small child that's all over the place. It simply wants to do something. So apparently, the teachers say if we give it something to do, we can sort of trick it to just focus on that. So sometimes if the mind is too agitated and the breath isn't enough to hold your focus, you can try this sound meditation. Sounds a little simple, but it's effective. You tell your mind, I've got a job for you. I need you to do something for me. I need you to pay attention to every sound that you hear. And just be aware of it. I hear the rain. It's like a small child. I hear the voice of the leader. You might hear building sounds. I'll let you do your own sounds. And that's all there is to it. Just tell your mind you need it to do something for you. And let it go find all the sounds it can find. And let that be your focus. Try not to analyze the sounds or do anything with them, just finding them. gently bring yourself back to the room, noticing how you feel now from when you entered, when you're ready, just open your eyes. Good morning. So, you're in meditation class, just to make sure everybody's in the right plane, right? So you guys, I'm not going to do a lot of preamble. It's a very simple class, so just want to let you know that the genesis of it is all Geshe-la's teachings on meditation. So I'm not making up anything. That one I made up a little, just the sound thing, but suddenly I'm going to read some notes from Geshe-la, and then we're going to do three meditations, so it's not me teaching anything that, from what I've learned here, it's more just trying to say exactly what he's taught. So we always preface it with that. So I think the thing that I was telling Brian and Michael before you got here, that this class is a little unique about, is that it is fun to be able to talk about some of the things. Of course, it's very tiny today, four of you, five. But if you want to be able to, a way to be able to say some things that you experienced during meditation, if you're comfortable, there's so few of us, then that can be it's a unique time. We don't usually have that kind of time to talk amongst without the main leaders in the center to just chat about how meditation works for us. So how did you like the sound part? Was that helpful? It's so simple.
Yeah, that was something for me, because, like I say, your mind is a lot.
Should we get the microphone for her? Yeah. The reason we use the microphone is because it's streaming right now, and nobody will be able to hear you. So even though you have to hold it real close to your mouth, get real close.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you have to get it. Yeah.
Yeah, the sound part was very important for me, because a lot of times, after a while, your mind just starts to wander. You start thinking, mm-hmm. like you said, what I have to do today, and
yeah.
different things, and just noticing, listening to the rain, cars going by,
yeah.
different things was a lot helpful, because I could actually concentrate and not let my mind wander.
Yeah.
To that
it's
point.
That simple, isn't it?
And I had never thought about doing that.
Oh,
so
good.
I was like, wow,
good.
Okay,
that's
I can
great,
do this.
Then. Monica, Michael, Denise. Hold it real close to your mouth.
Oh, okay. I was very blank, but I do, it's called...
Hold it real close to your mouth.
Oh, sorry, I do what's called EMDR therapy. They take electrodes, and it pulses between
hands. Oh, yeah.
And it makes you go into the REM cycle while you're awake. And so it's really, it helps you to, like, be able to dissipate images in your brain.
Oh.
So while meditating, it was really easy for me to just go black. I just, like... I'm able to melt the images in my head, so it just goes very black. My eyes actually were shaking a little.
Because you've done the work before in different, yeah.
Yeah. So I just like sort of, the rain, I was like sort of just kind of, it was a background, and then like I wasn't thinking about
good.
Anything.
That would be divine if I could get there.
But yeah, try, if you see their machines, they're really interesting, so. Like you try to actually grasp an image in your head, and it makes it dissolve. Like you don't even think about it. So,
and we're always trying to get an image in our head. Buddhism.
So I'm different. Kind of like I'm now trained to like dissolve images. So it's kind of neat.
That is interesting.
Yeah. I did not realize my foot fell asleep.
Yeah, that can happen. You want to be careful of that, because when you get up,
can we do this lying down?
Yeah, you can do whatever makes you comfortable. Brian, do you have any? Okay. Michael, Denise?
I just wanted to say that I really love the sound meditation.
Good.
And today I was able to hear beyond the rain to like some of the building sounds
yeah.
that I hadn't really noticed before, which was nice. And I find that in general, if I meditate and I'm not consciously picking one of the senses, but if I just try to be open to whatever sense, it's often the sound that I hear that I realize I had been blocking out, and the sound will come in kind of first.
I guess that's why they say, like, blind people do that, right? When they close their eyes, then they, I mean, when they, after years of not being able to see, this picks up another sense.
Maybe your hearing is more heightened.
Yeah. And we're doing it on a little minor level here.
Yeah. That's a great one because it's so portable.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, the focus on sound when you try to gauge beyond the rain to the splashing in the car tires.
Mm-hmm.
Even the hum of fans in the amplifiers here, you pay attention. And that's the gist of it, isn't it? Paying attention.
Yeah.
It's keeping me from going back to whatever
that's
happened
exactly
this past
it.
Week and jumping ahead to where I got to go
right.
through the weekend and just settle down. I tell the mind.
Yeah, settle down, baby. It's so simple that...
I like the little child image, too. Thank
you for that. Being like a child. Rinpoche, this one Rinpoche, he's not in our tradition, but The Joy of Living, Younger Mengir, I think. I haven't heard his name said. But The Joy of Living and Wisdom, there's a lot of books out here that he wrote. So he has a YouTube piece that I was watching, and he's one of the traditional, hysterically funny monks, you know, when they're just laughing all the time. But he explained this in great detail, and it does sound so simple. But, I mean, you all enjoyed it, but, I mean, he really explained why that works, is the mind is literally trying every moment to do something. And so he said, if you just give it a job, it'll be happy. Could you feel that switch? Could you almost feel it go, oh, what? Do you want me to do that? Did anybody feel that literal, I'm going to go do this now?
It's a subtle transition.
Mm-hmm.
literally going the other way. It's sometimes it seems it's like a subtle transition, but it's that.
Say it again.
The mind isn't controlling me.
Yeah.
But now I'm telling the mind what to do, and I am controlling
exactly.
the mind, which is the, you know,
exactly
seems to be an important objective of meditation.
So when we get to the point which. Now, I'm familiar with these notes. What he's talking about, Geshe-la's talking about, is in single-pointed concentration, which is a specific way to focus and to meditate. You're trying to find the thing to focus on, and we're going to talk about it, but, you know, usually in the tradition, if you've practiced a long time, you find one thing that you always focus on for your life, if it's a tanka or a holy image. But if you're playing around with it, the sound meditation is the same thing. So you're trying to just say, okay, mind, just do that. And the mind is, think how long every day that the mind is controlling us. We're its slave. It's just sending you here and it's sending you there and it's saying, be anxious, think about this, you're sad, it's just, every moment it's telling you to do something and controlling you. It doesn't feel like we have any control at all. And so when you train it, so this is just boot camp, to say this is how it's going to roll, baby. This is what I want you to do. And it follows pretty quick. Like, it's kind of shocking how easy it is to have you say, I want you to go do that. And it literally goes, oh, okay. I mean, we've experienced that with children when they feel like they are acting crazy, but we give them one thing to do and they're completely content. Sit down with mommy and do this puzzle. You know, it's the same thing. Oh, what? Okay. So it can be that simple, and then you can just build on your experiences. So when you take the neuroplasticity of the brain and you have a groove for letting the mind go crazy, it just gets crazier and crazier because it's training. You're training it. You're letting it be wild. So it's going to be wilder, actually. And when you fill in that gap with silly putty, I like silly putty because it settles, you know, and it becomes flat. You fill in that I don't want to have a mind that goes like this anymore. I want to have a mind that's peaceful and calm. You're literally making a new deep groove to be peaceful and calm. Those things always sound so basic, but they're...
I just find, I know people, friends of mine, seem to be in such a state of suffering. I think of a dear friend way back up north in Watertown, New York, who just seems to be in a constant anger and constant, you know, never a peaceful... you know, it's like don't you want to change that? Don't you want? And it's like, I think the habit gets so ingrained that it,
yeah.
No, I guess what, you go with what you know and you stay with what you're used
to. Well, until you see it as a habit, mm-hmm. you can't make the change. So, would you mind getting me some more hot water? In this? That'll help my throat. Just water in here. And you can put it here. Sorry, thank you. It's still hot. You can just fill it.
Just fill it? Or
yeah. No, just fill it up with water. Now, what was I going to say? The groove. So when we make the habit to do that, oh, we just get so comfortable. I feel like we don't even know that we're so comfortable having crazy minds. You know, we just think that that's what we do. Oh, I know the alternator story. Have you ever heard anybody talking about that? Like, if you came to me and said, thinking of a person. So Frank walked in the room, and he's a friend of mine, and he's like, I'm like, what's wrong? And he just says, my car doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And, you know, and he's very upset, and you're like, oh, gosh, what's wrong with it? So you start off being really upset with him, right, because he's very upset. And so he, thank you so much, sweetie. And he says, I don't know. It just won't work. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so then eventually it gets to be a little odd, so you say, well, what do the mechanics say? I haven't taken it. And so then you can start to feel a shift, right? Like it's getting a little weird. So you say, do you need me to help you get there? Do you need a ride? Do you need, you know, and he's like, no, my car just doesn't work. You know, and so you start to want to help him. So when you say, well, let's go find out what's wrong with it. And you get there and the guy says, it's the alternator. And he comes back to you and he goes, it's the alternator. It doesn't work. You know, and you're going, okay, that's like $60, maybe $80. And he goes, I know. And so maybe if he's broke, that would be traumatic, right? If you're really broke, that could be traumatic. But if you say, I'll get that for you, you know, and he's like, no, it just doesn't work. And that's all he keeps saying. Then he's not getting something, right? So he's suffering. He doesn't see that there's a way out, like, you just got to put a new alternator in and your car will work. And so it's childlike. But how often do we act like that? And so how would I be able to get my mind in, get my car fixed if I didn't know the alternator was a problem? So if all I did was walk around and just said, my car doesn't work, then it would be pretty pathetic of me. But that's kind of how I live my life. Like, you know, this. And there's answers everywhere to fix every little thing that we've got going on, but we just have to go find them. And we need help, and we need this. So, you know, obviously these are the Four Noble Truths. But you have to identify what your problem is, and your friend isn't willing to look at what the problem is. And as soon as you look at it, you bring it to your meditation, you do the work, you're on your way. That's simple, right? So this is like what Geshe was saying. These are the difficulties of the body and mind. And meditation really is the medicine to help you figure out where your problems are and how to ease them. And so what he's saying is the difficulties that we experience during the day, we know that you all probably know they come from your mind, but how often do we think about them coming from everybody else and the way everybody treats us and the way our car, it's just, does the car thing kind of work for you? So if you use that as your metaphor through the week, just try it and say, my alternator is broken and that's okay. I can fix that. I can.
He was telling me a litany of things that are wrong with his poor old car yesterday, and he's got a big smile on his face and he needs it to get around. But, you know, again, there's the other attitude of how you deal with it.
Yeah.
I'll take it as it comes and work on it as I can, as I'm able to.
Well, that's the practice. So I was thinking this morning before I got here, it's like right now, I don't mind saying, I think it's helpful when people who are even leading things say, my practice is really tricky. It's barely existent. Just because of this new position I have, I'm just exhausted. And so I'm not doing what I know to do on the morning level. I'm still doing my requirements and things, but it's really minimal. So I'm admitting that it's difficult right now. But I know what to do. So when I get like that, and I just want to say this like out loud sometimes, I don't beat myself up anymore about it. What I do is I beef up my attitude of the day-to-day, the moments, and the practice of the car, and the practice of someone needing something, and an email. You know, every little thing, bringing the essence to that. And so if I can keep that consistent, that is what we're trying to do from the practice, is bring it to the life. And if the life, if you can do it while you're going, some that's good enough. You just, we do what we can do until I can stay awake longer.
Is it good enough, or is it better? It's actually better.
I can't answer that.
I mean, I'm one. That's my question. That I find that the meditation practice has helped me at times when I would have previously acted very foolishly and angrily, and now I can sometimes.
It's chicken and egg, right?
A minute here, and just hold back, and really, where's that coming from?
Yeah.
That mind, my mind. What's going to come from my mind? Not that. It does work, but then if you get to the point where you feel you're manifesting that in your encounters with everyone, with road rage, with store people, with whoever, you know? It's like when this Jehovah Witness came to my door the other day.
Opportunity to share.
An opportunity, yeah.
But then, so I think what we would, if you think of it as chicken and egg or whatever you want to do, like it's flowing back and forth, that would be perfectly fine. But I would pretty much guess that there's something that may come along in our life that's ramped up a little higher than we expect, and we may not have the tools to deal with that. So that if you've got the consistent base of your meditation, then when the next big tidal wave hits us, you know, Don Brown used to say, it's just queuing up. It was never comforting. But that's, we need to have the fear and the faith. We want to, the fear of samsara and that. So we want to have the ability to know what we need to do when things are going to get more difficult. We're all aging. Some of us more than others. things are coming down the pike, so we wouldn't want to slow down the process of keeping the mind in a good place, if that's, yeah. So, the power generated by meditation is to reduce disturbing thought. Otherwise, I love to hear Geshe say, what do you do? There's nothing else to do. So that's all we have is our mind. And meditation is the way to feed it, to keep it healthy. And we've talked about the lack of distraction is like a tranquilizer. That's a neat line. The lack of distraction. Because that's how we live our lives, is with constant distraction. And that's the tranquilizer that we need. That could help our healthcare system. How many of you think about that in our healthcare system? If we could all just meditate, we wouldn't need as much. So how to occupy the mind, which is occupied so by so many other things, and that's like how we did the sound meditation. We learned to occupy it. So when I had you check in with your mental state, is that helpful to you? Do you like that? Like, do you like getting a little snapshot of where am I at this moment? Yeah. And then when I'm done, where am I? And then I check back in. So you can do that throughout the day. If you just say, well, where am I and what's bothering me? I try to do something that's just, what was behind that? Sort of a language I probably picked up here. What's behind that? And then you piece it, you take it apart, and then you can take it to your meditation, or you're just doing it on the fly, like I'm doing. What's behind that? And then throw those tools in there, whichever one's going to work. But Geshe-la talks about, if you just sit down to meditate and it's very agitated, he even makes it as simple as doing that nice, long, deep exhalation to start with. Because he's saying, try not to start your meditation with an agitated mind. You may not be able to get to positive, but at least get to neutral. And that's quite simple, but that's profound, too. Try to let it get to a place that isn't going all over the place, but it doesn't have to be happy, happy. Just try to get it to neutral. I call that Switzerland. Let's just get to Switzerland. Also, he referenced white fabric. I like that. Do you guys remember talking, hearing him say that? Transforming your mind into white fabric. Does anybody know why that would be? Do you remember the reference? Do you remember the? These are all from the meditation classes he led on Saturday mornings. But I've heard him say that before. But sometimes if you're like me, you'll kind of remember the reference and you'll just, it's a little cocky, like, oh yeah. And then if I go, I don't even remember what it was about there. Do you have that sense that sometimes you remember what he was talking about, but you can't remember the jewel behind it?
Yeah, this one. I remember talking about white fabric, but I don't remember.
Okay. Like he used to talk about the Shantideva and the leather, and I would just go, yeah, I love that story. And then if you asked me, I would actually go, but I can't remember what the teaching was behind it. So the white fabric is so that you can dye it any color. It gives me a little goosebump. That's beautiful when you think about it. We want it, that's so that's Switzerland. You want to get to this neutral place because you can't get straight to happy from here. And I've heard it explained like if the zero line was here, and a lot of us, if we have depression or anxiety, we're below here, and they're trying to get to here, it's too big of a leap. And it's almost unreachable. And so then they just, I've seen people beat themselves up about it, and they think, I can't ever get there. But they have to get to here. You got to get to the fabric to be white. That metaphor is beautiful. And then you have a fertile ground to do something with it. So if you just get to neutral in your meditation, that's a very good place to be.
And the fertile ground, as I recall from the meditation retreat, is the taking the white cloth and dipping it into the azure dye. And getting into the meditation and drawing it out and seeing that deep blue.
Yeah.
And then the deep blue just goes back to a faint, faint, almost white again.
Oh.
And you dip it again. And it's a little more blue each time.
Oh, did Geshe-la talk about that?
Do you remember that?
No.
The day of the meditation retreat, didn't we? At Nolan's farm, I thought we...
Yeah, isn't that funny? I didn't hear that metaphor.
Did I miss this one? Maybe it wasn't...
Oh, that has nothing... Certainly means I could have missed it.
Oh, no, it was in the Gampa. Now I remember someone in the
talk
we were talking about.
I don't remember that.
You know, that's how we acquire the skills and...
Dip it in again.
Just keep dipping and come back and realize you're not... It's going to go back, but it won't...
That's great, yeah.
Original will keep gaining in richness and color.
I try to tell people, like, do you remember the first time, if anybody... Try to think of some term that you heard, and I think dependent origination is a good one for me. Emptiness is good too. Something that was like, woo! And the first time you hear it, you barely turn your head because they're just words, right? Somebody's speaking, and if you've never heard before dependent origination and someone says it, you might go, but it doesn't really go in anywhere. You just think, oh yeah, you're hearing so many new things. And then the next time you hear it, you think, oh, I've heard that. So you have a little bit of a, but you have no clue what it meant. You can't remember anything. And as you keep hearing it, I remember the moments when I go, yeah, I have no idea what that means. I hear that word all the time, but I can't grab it. It feels like trying to grab a greased watermelon. Like, what did that mean? And then the next time you go, he talks about it in class, and you're like, mm-hmm. Then you go home, and you still go, where did that go? Like, it feels like it just gets removed from your brain. And the more I hear it, now you have it. It's part of your fiber. It's a groove in your brain, and you got it. And then... you gain realizations on it, so then it gets deeper and deeper. And that's probably a good way to think about that fabric going in the dye vat again and again. So that's all we're doing with everything, is we're just touching it, and then we're touching it deeper and deeper and deeper until we have this mental understanding, but that still doesn't mean we have a realization on it where we actually grab it. And did I talk about being a teacher last time? I think we picked, or maybe that was in when I was leading Meditation 101, so... I think it helps me to think about is anybody a teacher here? Yeah, you are. That's right. So when you were like young, or do you remember the moment when you wanted to be a teacher? Do you have a distinct memory of that? Denise is smiling, but she's not nodding.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, that's okay. And Michael did. That's fine. Either way, everything's perfect, but...
It was a distinct moment with an advisor who told me, why do you want to go into teaching there? And that's my stubbornness because I do. And he was like, you do realize you're not going to get a job and be 5,000 highly qualified in front of you for these teaching.
He's a microphone.
Yeah, and you know, I was being redirected everywhere else, you know, and I said, teaching seems to be the right fit for me. So,
well, let's go. So let's just take it just a step further. So you just keep. You study, you do everything, you have this desire, you want to be something, and you keep going further in your path, and you graduate, and they give you something that says you're a teacher, but then is there a moment when you actually feel like a teacher? You know, you know what I'm saying? Like there's a moment when you're doing the job even, but then sometimes people have told me that then when the student goes, Oh, you mean if I take five apples or, you know, something and I, whatever, or I, or they, when the lights go on in a student's eyes, however, whatever it is for you that makes you go, I just taught that child that. Something that's kind of undefinable, but it's a beautiful moment, and then you go, you feel like a teacher. So that's like dependent origination or whatever you, anything that you're trying to gain, anything with meditation. You get a little bit, and then all of it, the realization is when you like, you can't even explain what it is. You just feel like you are that, or you know you're a teacher now. It doesn't have to be literally a moment, but there's a difference between 15 years of teaching and the idea that you want to teach when you're 9. That Denise has some.
Yeah, I teach music lessons. My degree is actually in engineering, so I didn't have like a big premeditated time frame. And I've been teaching this time for about 12 years, piano and guitar, other things. And so I just said this week that I finally felt like a teacher.
Oh.
Honestly, I just had this realization this week. And when I feel like it is when I'm with a student, and it's not really so much about, this sounds a little backwards, but it's not really so much what's happening with them, but it's when I sense that there's a teachable moment coming, and I feel that rise up in me that, oh, I've got this information, and I see a way that I can share it, and it's sort of this feeling of, oh, yeah, because that's the alive moment, the flow moment, when I feel like I'm doing the right thing with my time. You know, I have something to share, and this is a great way to do it. And so I was telling my mom, you know, finally I feel like I'm coming into my own as a teacher, because every week I have a moment of this feeling when I feel like I see where I'm going with this, and I have lots of energy for it, and I just feel very alive, and I'm just excited that I get to do this, that I get to have the opportunity to share it.
That's great. Thank you. So, I mean, that's like having a thought here, isn't it? I mean, can you relate it to your Dharma practice in your life when you have a thought, but it doesn't have anything behind it yet because it's just a word? I mean, these are just words. These are just, I want to be a teacher. And then that experience, that's so interesting because I brought San's spiritual experience today. That the meditation is what brings that to you. So the life, like, that kind of flow in life. I'm not saying it very well, but you know what I mean. When something connects, and that's what meditation is about, making the connections. Because it is harder to do that in our day-to-day life than it is when we're sitting on the cushion and you're right there in the moment with the student. It's precious. And it's just going to get richer and richer. Thank you. That's really cool. All right. So let's see what else Geshe has to say. So when you are meditating to reanalyze your mind in the middle of your meditation, you can check back in and just do again, like, where is my mind? And then you bring that picture, sound, something in a little deeper. Venerable Renee is good about talking about that, like checking back in. And in that way, you're the mind watching the mind, so you're monitoring it, and you're just going, you're moving away, bring it back. And he's so gentle with his approach. You want to be the same way with yourself. Come back. We don't ever want to go, oh, God, I can't concentrate, because that's just going to break your concentration and make it even harder to get back. All right. I'm just going to, since we're going to be doing the same material every time, I'm going to pick different parts. Let's do, I thought maybe today, we do the 9-round breathing so often, I thought maybe we would take it on a little bit deeper level. A lot of times Geshe-la doesn't teach it with the way to breathe in. Like Don Brown did that. Who was at the Vajrasattva retreat? Okay, nobody. So have you done it before? You know 9-round breathing, Monica? Have you done that? Okay, so what we're going to do is you can take it on any level you want. So I'm going to explain it, and that this is like teaching yoga to 10-year-olds and 85-year-olds and 30-year-olds, and you can do it on every level. Whatever makes you comfortable, but I'm going to say the deeper way to do it plus the easy way to do it. Is that cool? So all you're really doing is 3 rounds of 3 and breathing in, and you can use your ring finger blocking the left nostril. This is just the physical part, and then we'll do it together. So you can take your ring finger, block your left nostril really lightly, breathe in through the right, Just cross over, breathe out. You do that 3 times. So that's literally what you're doing. And try to put your fingers together so that you don't have that. Like stack them like. Yeah, make it a little nice and tight. So that's, you do 3 of those. And then you switch. You breathe in, block the right, breathe in through the left. Breathe out through the right. And I'll be guiding you through this too. Inhaling. And exhaling. Okay, then the third set is through both nostrils. Out. Would you mind shutting the door for us? They might be coming in to set up. So that's literally left, and then right, and then both. So when we start, Monica, you can just stay in that way, or you can play with this other way. So the other way, have you, you've done the tubes before, I'm sure, with breathing in through the tubes. Michael, have you done that? Monica? Brian? Okay, Brian. So you imagine, I think of a candy cane, I don't know why, so think, yeah, the channels. So you think of the of a loop, like an umbrella handle here at this nostril. So when you block this one, you inhale up and it's like it goes down through the body on the right hand. So you can picture it like a straw or something clear, like a tube. It goes down and it goes across and then out through the tube. So you're learning to work with these channels to really have the air go where you want it to go, okay, in and across. So it's the same thing, but you're just adding a little bit more visualization to it. And then we'll do it together. And the same thing on the other side. And then when you get to both, you breathe in through that umbrella with both nostrils, umbrella handle, tube, down. Now bring them together into the central channel and exhale out through the central channel. And then to beef it up even more, you can close the lower door. So that's like a, what's the word for that? Like a Kegel muscle. So every time you inhale, then in the middle you inhale, then you squeeze in that muscle, and then you exhale. So you're hugging in the energy. It's a good way to say it. And there's swallowing too, but I don't really teach to that just because I haven't done that much. So I'm not going to even do that part. So we'll do it together. Now, just ask me anything before we start. So if that's like what you're talking about, or does anybody have anything, any questions about that? So do you feel like you know it enough that you want me to actually say left, right, or does everybody understand it? You want to just do it? Everybody good? Okay, so then let's just do our own 9-round breathing. Monica, is that enough? So what? So you can do it. Now, the other trick that I've seen, when I was on retreat the first time, they just say now 9-round breathing and everybody's just silent. And nobody's hand went up because we were all, you know, doing this at the Kadampa Center. And I was so confused, like, how are they doing 9-round breathing without blocking it? So the advanced students don't block their nostrils and they just imagine. So if you've ever, you might want to block it first to really get the sense of it. But if you've never tried that, you can try that. It's kind of cool. It's a real subtle way to do it, too. Okay, any questions?
Does it really matter that you do it this way as opposed to, you know, the finger over the third eye?
Oh, that's what you were doing. Oh, I've never seen that. Oh, then do whatever. I thought you were just... You can... Geshe-la's never said this, but I've heard breathe to the third eye and back down. But I've never touched it. Yeah, if you want to do that, that's fine. I wondered what he was doing. It's kind of cool. It gives you a point to breathe up to and back out. But since Geshe-la's never said to do that, I don't tell people that's. But you feel free to do that for yourself if you've been trained. I was trained to do alternate nostril breathing for yoga. We went like that, which I kind of like better because it's really simple. But I just try to do what he's taught us to do. It's harder with the microphone. Okay, so we'll just spend a few minutes in your own 9-round breathing. Okay, bring your attention back. How was that? Did anybody try it without their hands? Is it different? Have you done it without your hands before? Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was curious if you could say a little bit more about what Geshe-la said about the third eye, because that was the first time I tried doing it, thinking anything at all about the third eye. And what I found was when I was breathing in, like you, I thought you said, to breathe in to the third eye and then...
As if he doesn't talk about that.
Oh, he doesn't talk.
Yeah, so that's why I don't talk about it. But I had heard the same thing Michael had heard, that to do that.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever heard him reference it. Have you guys? Yeah.
Okay.
So he doesn't really say where to... Because I think I'm like you. Like I feel like I want this place to go to so then I can come back down.
Well,
did you like it?
What I discovered doing it, because I misheard you, was when I was breathing in to that point, the next thing from that, I noticed it changed the posture of the top of my spine, because before I was just thinking about breathing up kind of to my throat or maybe to my sinuses, you know, maybe to the top of my lungs or maybe just to my nose. But it actually
brought you up,
brought the top of my neck a little bit more from the crown rather than like this. Because if I think of trying to expand my chest to breathe in, it spreads my shoulders and it almost tilts my head back. But if I think of breathing up to the third eye, it brings my crown up, which I think is more of a proper posture.
Right.
As a visualization.
Maybe we could ask him, like, what's
the crust?
That would
be nice to know what he says about that.
What's the crust of the... He's talking about the crust of a wish-fulfilling gem in our Guru Puja class. We could use the word crust. What's the crust of the breath and the focus of it? Just kind of to know what he says about that. Anybody else have any... I didn't explain the reasoning of it, but it's just to kind of simply say it's such a profound breathing practice. And so sometimes when you hear that, it's beneficial to know that it's the one meditators of vast experience still use, because it's about the channels. There's layers and layers and layers of this practice which you can go through. So I even encourage you to go online and look stuff up. I've told the students many times, just go research it. There's a lot you can do with it if you want to play with it. Because every breath, every thought, some of these things, they sound so simple when you say them, but when you really think about it, every thought has an energy, and that's what Geshe-la talks about. The energy rides on that thought. And so if you just really take a moment to think about, that would even be a great meditation, just to meditate on what that actually means, then that thought has energy. So let's just take one moment to think about, it's kind of fun to do this little scenario. I like to teach like that, like, or lead like that. Like, if you think about a woman calling home to her husband, she's at work, and she says, could you bring some bread home? And he's like, I just can't believe you. I am so busy. Why can't you get the bread? You know, if there's this huge little argument that happens, huge little, that doesn't make sense. It's like George Carlin, jumbo shrimp. So there's a large argument that happens, starting from a seed moment. And it kind of blows up, probably because of maybe how they were in the morning. You know, for whatever reason, it's something that's way out of proportion. I think we can all safely imagine that happening. And she's so frustrated when she gets off the phone and her assistant walks in and says, I can't figure out how to do this spreadsheet. And she said, I have told you 100 times. I can't believe you don't get that. And so I think they would call that transference of anger. So she's literally frustrated because of her husband. And if that hadn't happened, you can imagine she might say, no problem, sweetie. Let me come over and show you how to do that again. When I first learned how to do it, I never could get it either. You know, she might have a loving thing to say. But because of this thing happening, she had a negative thing to say. So if we just take that one little scenario and we imagine that every thought has energy, look at all the energy that's packed into that tiny little scenario. And it's, so go behind it and go behind it. What's underneath it? There was just a shift in a thought that when the husband, when she said, can I have a loaf, would you bring him a loaf of bread? He went somewhere. But she didn't have to go there too, did she? So I've watched Susan and Richard Potter. They are like my shining example. It was beautiful. Richard was kind of saying something and Susan just said, I hear that. No problem. I'm sorry. What I meant was those kind of language, those kind of words that just like, it's beautiful. It's absolutely a beautiful example of you don't have to go there when the other person is going there. So every thought has energy. And so now think about even if you just thought about this morning, I mean, if you think about a day and a life, that's energy in your body. So that's what I try to think of. It's energy in your body from every thought you've had. And so what Nine Brown breathing does is take that energy and try to let it move away. Would you agree that that's a way to kind of simplify it? We've got this, it's wasted energy. And so when Geshe-la tries to translate that, he's never felt comfortable with the translation. I watch him go, I can't remember the Tibetan word now. What's the word he uses for the nom? Do you remember that? He'll say the word, but he'll say there's not a really good translation for it. And it's basically wasted energy. And so we don't talk about that much, you know, in our language, that we have this wasted energy in our body. It's not kind of a common thing, but think about it. It's just there. Now, it's going to be in your body till you get rid of it. And I've even heard people say, like, the negative energy can kind of reside in different parts of your body. It can create dis-ease, kind of going off track. But what he's trying to say is this is so important to find a way to let that energy leave your body. So doesn't that pack a little powerhouse behind why we would want to try to exhale? The exhale is very important. A lot of dissipation of energy leaves on the exhalation. It eliminates toxins from our body. And we don't ever really give that any credit. So if you breathe really shallow, you aren't eliminating it from the bottom part of your, you know, getting it out. So this nine-round breathing, by using the belly as bellows, you're squeezing. There's so much to it that I don't think we could ever comprehend how much can be behind this breath. So look it up, have a little fun with it. And then come back and tell me what you've discovered. That would be fun to do.
One of the meditations I recall, and I occasionally try to practice it, it's so difficult, is Venerable Rene's teaching about the breathing and visualizing that
inner heat,
coal,
yeah,
the ember,
inner ember,
that you fire that coal up with your wind energy as,
yeah,
you inhale, and then you exhale all,
yes,
yellow, kind of gray, bleh,
good,
sulfurous kind of, and it's powerful, but it's deep, it seems very deep.
Thank you. I can tell you, and I can show you, I do this a lot. I tell everybody about Vajrapani's website. And someone came in the other day and said, thank you so much for showing me because I've been using this. So if you go to Vajrapani and you touch media and then you go, and I think one time I'm going to ask if we can do this and let Brian, if we pick one, can you just record it and play it out? I mean, not record it. If we touch one of the recordings, so we can work on that. If Donna says it's okay to do that in here, pick, because he's in our tradition, and pick a nice, beautiful Venerable Rene meditation. He's been here. So if you hit media, then you'll see his picture, like an icon, and you touch it. There are like tons of meditations and teachings in there. And one is the inner heat one. And you can just sit and listen and play it. Like I take my iPhone into the meditation space with a little speaker. And so I'll play those meditations sometimes. They're self-love, and oh, they're just amazing. I really like to do those. Rene, R-E-N-E. So the next one we do, this is always about three meditations on these Saturday mornings, is the analytical meditation. So last week I know that, or last month, Denise and Michael enjoyed the Eight Transformative Thoughts. So I have two things to do, and I thought I'd maybe let you choose. I had picked a poem to do, and then this morning Ernie mentioned something from Venerable Rene. So this would be, we can just this would be like a contemplation on the graduated path. There's many things like this, but this is a different one. It's not foundations. So these are always really lovely to do. It's nice and slow. And or I have a poem, a song of experience. I can almost say that this, pretty much remember this book was recommended by Shanka. Does anybody remember him talking about that in class in DB? I think he said it in reference. I always want to make sure that I'm not saying something out of, it's incorrect, but when he said you want a little juice to your meditation, your practice, you want a little something that's different, you want a little something to contemplate on that's just simply beautiful, but you might just not want to go to poetry, mundane poetry. So these are all Tibetan sages, I think, just different Tibetan teachers through the tradition, some ancient. And it's a little shocking what some of them are. It's a very unique book, so I can recommend it. Songs of Spiritual Experience. And Thupten Jinpa, which is His Holiness's translator, did some of the translations in here. It's an amazing...
The words are like charts and cats and
chords. Just poems. I mean, song. I mean, I guess the word poem could be translated first. They're called songs, but... Okay, like Dakini's Feast, A Taste of Meditation. These are visions of mystic consciousness. I mean, this is an unusual collection. How to Engage in the Meditative Path, Wielding a Club in the Darkness. You know, they have lines of self-encouragement written in Lhasa in the Year of the Horse, 1284. Okay. So it can be... And you can then read this. So the point of this meditation is to find something that's different than your calm abiding, that's different than the breath work. So if you can, if you have the time, a beautiful practice is to do something that's the breath work in the beginning to calm down, and then to do your calm abiding that's literally the same thing you pick each time, and then to do an analytical meditation, and usually it's recommended to do on the Lam Rim. So if you were taking a class, you would then use whatever, like the Guru Puja, you would put that piece into your practice and meditate on a teaching. Or you can pick, you know, that's, so this is what we're going to do in this course every month, is pick one thing that I'll read very slowly, and you get the chance to just sit there and do whatever works for you. You can just let the words roll over you, however you want to do this, but this is about analyzing the experience of it, and the purpose is to just let that be, of course, be your focus, so that it helps your mind not wander. Okay, so I'll read it nice and slow. So first, settle your mind and just get yourself into the nice, relaxed place. One way is to imagine that you can begin this meditation straight from the mind that you ended your last meditation. So see if you can slip right back into that calm, peaceful place. As Venerable Rene says over and over, bring your mind home. Very lovely thought. Experience of the Single Taste by Zaw Paltru Rinpoche, who lived from 1808 to 1887. When your grasping mind engages an object real but illusory. When your grasping mind engages an object real but illusory, the illusion may deceive the mind. The illusion may deceive the mind. Yet object and mind, like the moon and its reflection. Are of a single taste, though they seem to be two. Yet object and mind, like the moon and its reflection, are of a single taste, though they seem to be two. That is, if you truly know it. That is, if you truly know it. When your grasping mind engages an object real but illusory, the illusion may deceive the mind. Yet object and mind, like the moon and its reflection, are of a single taste, though they seem to be two. That is, if you truly know it. When an old man's eye wanders toward a body of youthful flesh, it may bring to life the corpse of his lust. When an old man's eye wanders toward a body of youthful flesh, it may bring to life the corpse of his lust. If body attachment is freed, within the expanse, youth and old age become a single taste. If body attachment is freed within the expanse, youth and old age become a single taste. When an old man's eye wanders toward a body of youthful flesh, it may bring to life the corpse of his lust. If body attachment is freed within the expanse, youth and old age become a single taste. When you perceive the three stages of birth and rebirth as permanent, when you perceive the three stages of birth and rebirth as permanent, the pain of death may indeed be intense. The pain of death may indeed be intense. Yet, in the essence of pristine consciousness, birth and death are of a single taste. Yet in the essence of pristine consciousness, birth and death are of a single taste. When you perceive the three stages of birth and rebirth as permanent, the pain of death may indeed be intense. Yet in the essence of pristine consciousness, birth and death are a single taste. when the strings of love are tight for family and friends, the stress of separation may be intense. When the strings of love are tight for family and friends, the stress of separation may be intense. Yet, if you know the nature of samsara coming together and parting are of a single taste. Yet if you know the nature of samsara coming together and parting are of a single taste. When the strings of love are tight for family and friends, the stress of separation may be intense. Yet if you know the nature of samsara coming together and parting are of a single taste. When you expect too much from the gods, you may suspect a devil's work. When you expect too much from the gods, you may suspect a devil's work. Yet, if you see the whole world as a god, God and devil become a single taste. When you expect too much from the gods, you may suspect a devil's work. Yet if you see the whole world as a god, God and devil become a single taste. When you pursue the trail of thoughts too far, hundreds of things you need to do come to mind. When you pursue the trail of thoughts too far, hundreds of things you need to do come to mind. Yet, when you glimpse the non-conceptual mind, you can sleep like a carcass free of deeds. Yet when you glimpse the non-conceptual mind, you can sleep like a carcass free of deeds. When you pursue the trail of thoughts too far, hundreds of things you need to do come to mind. Yet when you glimpse the non-conceptual mind, you can sleep like a carcass free of deeds. If you listen to everything people say, you freeze, for there is nothing you can do. If you listen to everything people say, you freeze, for there is nothing you can do. Yet, when you determine your own fate, you can instantly turn the mind inward. Yet when you determine your own fate, you can instantly turn the mind inward. If you listen to everything people say, you freeze, for there is nothing you can do. Yet when you determine your own fate, you can instantly turn the mind inward. Your qualities are greater when others see them. Yet when you know your own faults, there is no room for self-delusion. Your qualities are greater when others see them. Yet when you know your own faults, there is no room for self-delusion. It is time to bury the evil corpse. Your qualities are greater when others see them. Yet when you know your own faults, there is no room for self-delusion. It is time to bury the evil corpse. You can sit in the chair. You're not seeing her face. How was that for you? Did you like it? I could feel. I know last time you said the repetition. It was amazing. Even reading it, it was meaning like really. I love this poem. Every part of it, it's beautiful. A single taste. We hear that sometimes, but I remember asking a question a long time ago. What does that mean? And this explains it so well. How did that work for your, on the level of just meditation? Do you guys like it? So this is kind of hard to recreate in your own house.
It's different than a prose teaching. You know, from the teacher, from Geshe-la or anyone, Shankar or anything, when you talk in prose about something like impermanence, but when you get to sit with it in metaphor and in imagery, it resonates deeply.
As far as methodology goes, I can suggest a couple things you could do. A, I can tell you that even reading it out loud was extremely beneficial and meditative, even though I was providing it to you. So you could do that in your own cushion. And B, you could literally take your own phone, if you have a smartphone, and hit voice memo. You know, the old-fashioned tape recording. And you could literally record your voice. Or you could have a loved one do this method, because sometimes it's uncomfortable to hear our own voice. We focus on that. And then find some things you really love, and then you'd have a little collection, and you could play them back. Like you could have your husband, partner, friend do this. Especially, I think I'll do this one time. Was anybody here when we were doing Lama meditations when Geshe-la was out of the country with Venerable Lama? Were you here? Do you remember when she did the, like a bubble, a star, like goosebumps? It was Lama Zopa Rinpoche's version of that she read really slowly. It was amazing. So I'm going to do that for you guys one time. But I personally wanted to have it recorded by somebody so that I could play it at home. That you just have to get somebody to read it for you, you know. Gives you some options. Okay. We didn't set our intention in class. I forgot to do that. We can dedicate. What's anything else to discuss? Any other points?
I didn't think I could learn the Vajrasattva 100 syllables very quickly. It would take me a long... I think I'd be working on it all year. Doing what you just said, coming in here and letting it, recording in the Gampa while we chanted it, and then taking that to my meditation.
Mm-hmm. It's there.
Got it. Thanks.
I took... let's see. Do you know that we used to have a lot of those recordings of Venerable Rubina's, her teachings? And they were... I think we produced them ourselves, right? And then we put them in CD cases and provided them, and we sold them in the bookstore. There was one probably on purification. So I took that recording and just hit my smartphone on a memo and recorded her doing the Vajrasattva mantra, just one of them. And then I could play that over and over because I wanted a recording to learn it. But I can also really recommend, I just got to be in the foundation store, which was amazing, like literally standing there in Oregon. And it's just a room, you know, with racks. It's kind of funny being in the, after going online and purchasing things from there, to actually be there was beautiful. And they didn't have any FPMT essential prayers left, but I asked her to order some because for our bookstore. Because when you can play that in your car, you can, and it's literally, most of the tunes are how we do them. So the multiplying mantras and all those things, I loved that. That's how I learned a lot of the prayers, playing them. So I can recommend that if we get them in the store. That's one way to really learn some of the prayers. Anybody else have anything they want to offer? Okay, well, may everything we do today, did today, and that we will do, be of amazing, amazing benefit of our minds, so that we will do that experiment of trickling out through our day and having our energy and our thoughts be positive, so that we can just, we have, there's no end to how those positive thoughts will ripple out through everyone's lives and throughout the whole world and affect every ant in the ground and every bug, every worm. So let's imagine that everything we do and that we have done is already benefiting all these beings, so that everyone, every being, every animal, every bug can become enlightened. Amen. Go out there and do it. Thank you.